Session number 22230, Reel 1.
Kenneth Sparks. Do you like to be known as Ken?
Ken, usually.
So, Ken Sparks, and yes. This is Reel 1. And, Ken, if I could ask you about your life before the war started, whereabouts were you living?
We lived in Lancelot Road, Wembley. It's a no-through road, but quite a long one. Our house actually faced north. It was bitterly cold. An avenue right opposite, and it blew. And funny enough, at the last but one reunion, we went round and looked at it. It's still there, because they were quite nice houses, yes.
How many in your family?
There was me to start, and then I had my father remarried, because my mother died when I was very young. And I had a stepsister, I don't call her my stepsister, she's my sister. She's 10 years younger than me, so there were two children and two adults.
What did your dad do?
Well, before the war, he was a French polisher, journeyman French polisher was his trade. But before the war, like so many men, his work dried up. And in the end, at the beginning of the war, just before the beginning, he actually got into the post office as a postman, because all our family had been in the post office otherwise. Then,
how about your education, Ken? Where did you go to school?
Well, I started off, I can remember, my first teacher was Miss Strickland at Park Lane Infant School. I think there were 65 in the class, and she ruled perfectly. There was never any troubles. And we learnt by rote, of course we did, but we learnt, yes. And then I followed that, I went then from there, when I was old enough, to East Lane Junior School and then East Lane Senior School. That's how things were. During the beginning of the war, we only did part-time schooling. We did mornings, and another school did afternoons, alternate weeks, because of, I suppose, bomb damage somewhere.
Do you remember the outbreak of war?
Not as such, no. I mean, we knew that there was going to be a war. It was in all the papers, and I can vaguely remember people digging up in the park. But I don't remember it as closely. I suppose if I'd been just that little bit older, I might have realised how much more difference it would have made to us. But we were children, we enjoyed it, going round picking up bits of shrapnel.
Yes. How old were you, Ken, the war broke out?
The war broke out in 1939, so I was 12. And then I was 13 when I went on the boat.
Yes,
and then I left school at 14.
So during this time, you know, from the outbreak of war until things began to hot up in sort of May, June 1940,
yeah.
Did your life continue much as normal, apart from this part-time education?
Well, there were the air raid, which caused quite a lot of problems. We did go up and see London burning that early, you know, when the Blitz was on. It was nasty, yes. What could we do? This is what happened. It applied to all, wherever we lived, these things happened. My aunt, during the war, moved down to Plymouth, and that really got bombed. You see, but I can't say that it made that much difference to us. We were children, we were enjoying it, what we could of it. Let's put it that way. Yeah.
How about this idea of you leaving, you know, for Canada?
Well,
do you remember how that came about?
I really don't know how it came about, except that my stepmother, she's my mother, really, but she had relatives in Canada, and I understood that anybody who went on this Corb system had to have relatives to go to. It wasn't like in England, where you got put on a train, sent to a country town, and the evacuation officer found you places to live. No, you had to have a place to go to.
Consulted at all about this?
No. Children weren't in those days. Children would, I'm afraid, had to do as they were told. There was no, I'm not doing this in those days. You did what you were told to do.
Did you have any idea of the people you were going to?
No, not really, other than that they were relatives of Mum, and it was in Alberta, in Canada, at Edmonton was the place I was heading for. I never have been there since.
Was there much in the way of preparation, you know, getting you ready to...
You had to have a change of clothing, naturally. And you had to have, well, everybody had to carry their gas mask and their identity card. But there wasn't that much preparation because going to Canada has got a lot more than we'd got. We were very badly restricted, I think, for the stuff that we could buy. That's why I had to keep my eye on my overcoat, which in a way probably saved me because it kept me warmer than I would have been. It would have been just pyjamas otherwise. Yeah. So, as I say, I wasn't consulted. I was told that they were thinking of doing it, but, I mean, that was the end of it. I mean, that was life, yes. Children didn't do as they do now, I'm afraid.
Did Canada mean anything to you, though? Did you have an image of where you were going?
I hadn't got a clue other than the only thing that I knew about Canada, especially at Edmonton or Alberta, were the great big rolling wheat fields. And that's about all I knew of it. But, of course, once we got on the boat, we had people telling us what to expect and what it was like and everything else.
So how did you feel about, you know, being sent to Canada, Ken?
Well, it was an adventure. Oh, yes. And one of my friends from up the road, he was coming as well. He was going to his relatives.
What was his name?
His name was Terence Holmes. He died. He was picked up with the girls in that boat, but he died on board the Hurricane. I used to play with him regularly, but there we are. Life.
So I wonder if you'd be good enough to tell me as much as you remember, Ken, about your journey. And this is right from home to, Liverpool. Was it Liverpool?
Liverpool we went to, yes. Well, I can remember going up from Wembley to Liverpool. No, not to Liverpool itself, but to the main line station that took us to Liverpool, where we met all these other children from different areas, all going to the same school to sleep overnight. I can remember that. There seemed to be hundreds of us, whether there wasn't, but it seemed that way, because they had their parents with them, and, of course, it made quite a crowd. And then, of course, there were all the officials to watch us and all the escorts as well. To meet us, and we went from the mainline station, which I think at the time was Euston. I'm almost sure it was Euston Station. Yes, I'm certain it was. And we went from there to Liverpool itself, where we were met again and bussed onto this, I can't remember the name of the school, but we were bussed to this particular school to stay overnight, where they fed us and bedded us all down, and the next morning, which was a rotten wet morning, naturally, we were taken down to the docks and put onto the boat. But it was a beautiful day in a way, because it was such a gorgeous looking boat, although it was manned mainly by Lascars, as they were called, which I think is the proper name for Indian seamen. But it was so well, it was gorgeous, especially for people like us who had come from, shall we say, modest beginnings. 9-course meals, oh dear.
But was it a very big boat?
Yes, it was. To us it was enormous. I mean, the biggest boat I'd been on till then had been the paddle steamers down to Southend Pier. So it was, and it was over 10,000 tonne. It was quite a big boat, yes. It was a beautiful ship indeed. And the crew couldn't have been nicer to us. I know that we weren't the only people on board. There were an awful lot of people on board. But they couldn't have been nicer to us because we were children, no.
These escorts, you were saying.
Yes.
Who would these have been? And would you have been allocated a little groups of you to an escort?
Well, initially, once we got to Liverpool, you met these different escorts. They were responsible for so many children each. But mine, I can't remember who mine actually were. The escorts I ended up with on the boat were Margaret Cornish, Mary Cornish, I should say, and Father Rory O'Sullivan. And I'm still writing to Rory O'Sullivan now, and he's 93, I think. Yeah. But, of course, poor old Mary, she died some time back. She got decorated for what she did in the boat.
Yes, I hope you're going to tell me about that later.
Yeah, of course I will. Yeah. Yeah.
But you were sort of given, you were put under charge.
You were put under charge. An escort was responsible for so many children. And on the boat, of course, you were looked after anyway, not only by the escorts, but also by the officers and the Canadians that were there to look after us. There was a Canadian young lady who was doing all the filming. Yes. I'm afraid she didn't live either. But, yes.
So, arriving on this boat, were you shown to your accommodation?
Well, we were mustered, of course, at first, and then in groups we were taken onto the different decks to where we were going to be sleeping, and then shown our different cabins. And I think most of us, it was 4 to 5 to a cabin. Way down below, of course. It was a long walk down and a long walk back up, but it was well worth coming up for the dinners.
How long were you on the ship before it sailed?
Well, before it sailed, I think we were on for about 2 days, because they were amassing the whole convoy to go, and this was the lead ship of the convoy. Yes. As far as I can remember, it was about 2 days there before the boat actually sailed away from Liverpool. And I can vaguely remember seeing Liverpool disappearing in the midst of rain and sort of foggy weather. But, yeah, that's life. Yeah, smashing.
So what were you doing until this, you know, great disaster?
Well, each day we had lessons, just the same. Oh, yes, as if we were still at school. We still had lessons. And, of course, we were being taught gradually about the Canadian way of life and how they managed and what to expect each day. And then, of course, we had a certain amount of free time in which we could play games and talk and such forth.
Was there much put on for you in the way of sort of social activities?
Well, they tried to keep us occupied, yes. After all, you've got to think, most of us were under 14. There weren't many of us that were over 14. And they had their work cut out, knowing what children are like. I mean, we often went to places where we shouldn't have done, no doubt.
It must have been a very sort of exciting environment for the young boys.
It was smashing for all the boys. I don't know so much about the girls, but for the boys it was lovely. When you consider that, as I say, most of us came from a poorish environment. I won't say we were poor, but we hadn't got the sort of money that would have enabled us to go on a boat like that for a holiday or anything in that sort of, in that case. But we did enjoy it, and we certainly got up to lots of things we shouldn't have done, I don't doubt. But we never did find out if we should have or not, not at the end.
How about the convoy? Were you aware of the convoy?
Oh, yes, we were allowed on deck. Oh, yes, we were allowed on deck for about 3 or 4 hours at least a day, especially when the weather was very nice. And even when it was wet, you could still go up there. There was nothing to stop you. And it was to us, it was a big, you know, all them ships. And there was the destroyers going up and down. Oh, it was lovely for children. And, of course, we were younger then, I think. Children grow up too quick now. Or they're forced to grow up too quick, if you like. But, yeah, it was nice, yes.
Well, were you aware of any danger? You know, did you feel
think that there would anything would ever happen. I mean, all those boats and Navy boats and, well, no, much too big a convoy to have any problems. But there we are. It was unfortunate that the escort got took away. Otherwise, we possibly wouldn't have had a problem.
Were you aware of that when it disappeared?
No, we weren't told things like that. I mean, one day it was there and the next day it wasn't. I mean, it didn't mean anything to us. We just thought, oh, it's probably out chasing submarines. That was our thoughts, being children. We didn't know it wasn't coming back. But
What sort of training did you get on lifeboat?
You had lifeboat drill every day, without fail. You had to, wherever you were, you had to go to your lifeboat. I've got a vague idea. My lifeboat was number 26, by rights. You had to go there every day. You had at least one drill, if not two drills a day. You had to have your life jacket on at all times anyway. Big kapok things that you had to wear around your neck at all times. They weren't taking any chances with us, I must admit.
How about the other people on the other sort of children and families? Were you mixed up together?
No. The Corps refugees, as they were classed, were all in one area. You could mix at meals, and you could mix when you went round the boat, but normally you didn't. You didn't know these people, so you didn't really mix with them.
Were there sort of people who'd gone in a much more private
community? Oh, a lot of people had gone privately, yes. And, of course, there were other people on there for other purposes besides it wasn't just a refugee ship. I mean, we had a millionaire Polish businessman who, when we arrived back in Gorok, was met by General Sikorsky, because I've got his signature upstairs somewhere. Yes. I mean, nobody knows why, but I mean, there were a lot of other people that were not necessarily refugees, but were working their way across either to Canada or America for business purposes, in all probability.
I suppose before you went on this ship, you would have been having the sort of austerity rations in Britain.
Oh, yes.
What was the difference between the food?
It was terrific food in comparison to what we'd been having. I mean, we lived with what the rations were, which were quite reasonable at the beginning of the war. They weren't too bad. But we certainly didn't run to 9-course dinners and such forth, did we? And as many sweets as you like, sort of thing. Oh, dear. Yes. And, of course, the boat itself had come from India and had a lot of Indian crew on it as well, which I suppose they like children. You know, they did look after us, yes. Oh, they really did.
And life in your cabin with your other, was it three or four?
There were three other. They were younger than I were. But really, you only went down to the cabin we got sent down at 8 o'clock to go to bed. Out of sight, out of mind then, weren't you? But that was the idea. You perhaps might have read for a little while, but in most cases you chatted and then talked about what you'd done for the day and then went off to sleep. Until the next morning when about 7:30 they woke us up usually, so that we could be down for 8 o'clock breakfast.
And then, as you say, you had lessons and routine.
Yes, you still had a routine to adhere to. That you still had a certain amount of schoolwork to do, and then plus the time that you learnt about Canada. And, of course, you were taken round the boat as well by different members of the crew at certain times. You know, it was a thrilling time for children. Oh, dear, especially young boys. Really was.
Did you ever meet the captain?
I think we met him once. We all went into what was one of the large staterooms, and he came there to give us a talk. But we never met the admiral who was in charge of the convoy, who was also on the boat. But I'm still in touch with one of his signalmen. Yeah. Oh, we still keep... We write to each other, yes. Even now. And until... A few years back, I was in touch with the chap who was in the Sunderland flying boat who saw us. But he just died a little while back, and I still write to his wife every so often, yes. Yeah.
What was the name of the signalman?
Johnny Mayhew. He lives up north, so we don't see each other, but there was one reunion at Portsmouth, which was arranged by Blake Sims, I think. This wasn't one that the girls arranged. And he was there with both the airmen as well. And there was one other... The last reunion that we had, which supposedly is going to be the very last one, there was a seaman from HMS Antony who helped us up the nets when we clambered up, because we couldn't climb very much after 8 days in a boat. Yeah. It's surprising where these people arrive from. They still keep in touch. This is a thing. Yeah, I suppose it's something you never forget, isn't it? You can't. They keep bringing it up.
Could I ask you now, Ken, about the events of the night of the, I think it was September the 17th, wasn't it?
I think it was.
What actually happened in as much detail as you can recall?
Well, we went to bed at our normal time, which was 8-ish, into our cabins, and I think, as far as I can remember, we were sound asleep when there was this rather loud noise, and the lights all flickered and went on and off and out, and there were screams, and naturally there was a lot of noise and a lot of confusion. But what I did in my particular cabin, I made sure that the three younger people in it got out into the corridor where everybody was walking, not rushing, just walking quite calmly towards the main staircase. I then realised that I hadn't got my overcoat, so I nipped back into the cabin and got it, and then went back and got in the same queue. But of course the youngsters that were with me were further along. We worked our way to the main staircase, up the main staircase, through to the dining rooms, and then out onto the deck. The deck itself, the hatches had been blown off, the emergency lights were on, there were electrical sparks coming up from different parts of the ironwork, I suppose, where the, and of course there was an awful lot of noise. The wind was blowing, it was raining like mad, and we then, nobody went mad, we walked round this great big hole. We were guided round by the crew to get round it to where the lifeboats were, on whichever side you were on. We were on the far side, so we walked right round, walking down towards what was my lifeboat. I was picked up by a sailor, whose name I shall never know, and he said, "No, there's room in this boat for you, son," and just put me in. There was a few more got in the boat, and it was, you could still see everything that was going on there, such a lot of noise and mess and steam, of course. But we were then lowered, and luckily we were one of the lucky ones. We were lowered correctly, and we actually got in the water without even getting wet, other than by rain, of course, and wind. And we were then, it wasn't a boat with oars, it had a system where you pushed a handle and pulled a handle, which in turn turned a propeller, so that there was no oars, you hadn't got any problem like that. So as soon as it hit the water I won't say gently, because it sort of dropped, but as soon as it was in the water, that you push the handles and they just pulled away. But you could see the boat with all the lights on gradually going down. There were boats being, lifeboats that were dropping people out because they were tipping, letting one end go loose before the other end was. So they were tipping, and a lot of people fell out of the boats, and of course there was a lot of noise, a lot of screaming naturally. But the lights were all there, but we pulled away a little way, because you had to allow for the fact that when the boat did sink, it would create quite a problem with pulling boats with it. So we had to get away a reasonable length away. We pulled away. Nobody else pulled away with us. We didn't see any other boats at all, not lifeboats. It was rather horrific, yes. I know I shall always remember it, but things bring it back. You see pictures, perhaps, of a convoy on films, and oh dear, that brings it straight back, doesn't it? That night, there's normally a nightmare. Yes, even now. You can't forget these things. But life. We managed, we pulled away far enough, and then of course when daylight came, because this was somewhere around about 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, but when daylight turned up, there was nothing. No people, no flotsam, no boats. Just us.
Did you see the boat actually go in?
Actually go right down, yes.
What is that like when you see a boat?
Well, when you think how gorgeous a boat it was, but the state that it was in, I suppose, with the bits blown out of it, and the steam and the siren going as it went down, in a way, I suppose, it would never have been able to be mended, so perhaps it went to its own grave. But how do you explain it? It wasn't nice at all for the boat. And as for us, I mean, to see it go, what are we going to do now? Sort of idea. But there was six of us children and two escorts. We were right at the front of this boat. There was a bit of canvas cover to keep the rain off. And we made the best of a bad job, shall we say. Yeah.
Were you the only ones in the boat, the six kids?
Oh, no. There were 46 seamen. There was a steward. And there was Johnny Mayhew, the gunner. There was, I think, all told, I suppose there must have been well over 50 of us, because there was this millionaire businessman as well. I suppose we were 46. I think there were at least three white officer crew, because they cast the steward as an officer. Three white officers, I think there was, plus Johnny Mayhew, who was Admiral Staff. And so it was somewhere in the region of about 54, 55 of us, I should think, all told, in this boat.
Were you very squashed together?
Well, we squashed together for warmth. It was the middle of the Atlantic. It was awfully cold. And of course, it was raining like mad, naturally. And the wind was blowing. It was I think it was a false 8 gale, actually, at that time of night. We kept huddled together, mainly to keep warm and dry. And of course, you had to bail the boat out as well, because that was getting all the rain as well. Until we had a little canvas cover over the front of the boat, which, once that was up, stopped the seas shipping in anyway, so that at least we only had to contend with rain then. But initially, you were so busy bailing and pushing and what's... Because although we were small, we weren't too small to help, you know.
Yes, going back to the sort of disaster itself... you were saying you pulled away alone. There were no other boats with you.
Oh, well, there were no other boats. As we pulled away, we were the only boat that was the right way up, put it that way. And of course, we couldn't see the other side of the city of Benares. We hadn't any clue of what happened on that side.
Did you see many people in the water?
We saw an awful lot of people dropping down out of the boats as they tipped out, because they dropped the falls, didn't drop them correctly, and the boats tipped, and of course, people fell out. Yes, there were... a lot of people in the water, but I don't think that we were able to pick any up, because we were already over full, and everybody had their lifeboat jackets on anyway, so they should have, I mean, if it hadn't been for bad weather, they might well have survived. In fact, some possibly did, I don't know, if they clung to other boats or the flotsam that was floating about. But as far as we know, they only ever found the two lifeboats, one with the girls on and ours. They did find another lifeboat, I think, the day after ours, but they'd all died, they'd all starved to death, because we didn't have a lot of food either.
So you were in that boat from the 17th, I think you arrived at Gourock
on the 26th, I think, yeah. It was. Got a vague idea that we were picked up somewhere around about the 21st, but I'm not 100% certain, because we were on that boat for quite some way. And the first day on the boat, we weren't allowed to eat anyway. I think our stomachs had shrunk too much to let us.
What are your memories of those days? When
on the boat?
Be it sort of early days.
Well, we... I mean, at first, of course, it was an adventure, in a way. Not the nicest of adventures, but an adventure. But, of course, there was very little food. We had a ship's biscuit and or a piece of peach or a piece of sardine or whatever per day, and a sip of water per day. And it kept us alive. We caught rainwater whenever we could and such forth, but we... some days were nice, the sun shone, and it was a nice day when the sun shone, and then, of course, other days it wasn't. Once, I don't know how many days out, about three or four days out, we were surrounded by a pod of whales, but we had to chase them away, because otherwise their flukes could have easily have smashed the boat to pieces. And then I know on the fifth day we saw a merchant ship in not very far away, and we made a lot of noise and waved, but didn't see us. It had stopped for some reason, possibly a breakdown of engine, but nobody looked off, so they never saw us. And just as we were sort of getting near enough to prep for us, them to hear us, the screw started and off it went. That was a big disappointment to everybody, yes. But on the other hand, there was a thought that, well, if we've seen one boat, we must be in the shipping lanes. Little did we know that it was also a ruse of the Germans to do that sort of thing with merchant ships, to entice other boats to come and help, and then they sink them. There we are.
What was the sea like? You know, were the waves very high?
Initially, when we were first torpedoed, it was a force 8 gale. Yes, it was very, very rough. Boats were lucky, actually, even if they had landed in the sea, were lucky to be able to stay upright. I think we were exceedingly lucky with our people looking after us on that boat.